Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Well, good evening, my brothers and my sisters, and welcome once again to the PRF table. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and sitting here at the table is none other than Mary Ann Williams, also known as Mama. Mama, good evening, and say hello to the people.
Okay, good evening, and good evening to my PRF family. Just so happy that we can be together one more time, and you know that you're greatly appreciated. And with that being said, I'll turn it over to Dr. Nathaniel Dunlap, Jr.
Amen, and bless you, Mama. So listen, today is August the 17th, 2017, here at 8 p.m. like we normally are every Thursday night here on Blog Talk Radio. And tonight we got another one of those type of topics, Mama. We've been talking all month from the larger theme of economic injustice. And if you look on the flyers that we have posted all around on Facebook and on our website, you'll be able to see that injustice is not one word. We have it as two words. And that was intentional. I'm surprised nobody's asked the question of that. Dunlap, you spelled injustice wrong. No, I want us to focus on the end part of justice. What do we need to be doing inside of justice to make sure that justice is coming about and is coming forth like it's supposed to be, especially when we talk about godly justice? And on the first night when we had our first show, we really just opened up the conversation coming from Micah chapter 6, verse 8. This is what the Lord requires of thee. I tell you, I'm not going to tell you the whole rest of that one verse. Not that I can't, but because I want you to go look it up. But I'm focusing on that area, that part of it where it says, what does the Lord require of thee? If you can't get past that, then all the rest of it doesn't even matter because you're not taking any type of personal responsibility with that. We also came from the book of Isaiah, the 58th chapter, looking at verses 6 and 7. In that particular text, at least that particular chapter, Isaiah 58, it was talking, the prophet was speaking from God about fasting. And it talked about this type of fasting. This is what you're doing. But then God had to rebuke them and say, okay, now this is what I really want. So if you're going to call yourself fasting, then this is what I really want. And he hit on some things about injustice. Again, Isaiah 58. Verses 6 to 7. So those of you who are listening on your car, when you get somewhere, pull it up on your app, pull it open in your Bible. That's that book that may be sitting in the back of somebody's car window. You may not have looked at it in a while. Go get it. Look up these verses. We're giving them to you for a reason. And then when we had our show on last week, we focused on how would Jesus view the way you administer economic justice? How would Jesus view your church's response to economic injustice, even with inside of herself? And again, the same scriptures, we're not getting away from Micah chapter 6, verse 8, and we're not getting away from Isaiah 58, verse 6 to 7. However, Mama, today is a new day.
Yes.
Okay. Praise God, it's a new day.
Okay.
Lord have mercy. There has been so much going on in our country, so much going on in so many different cities. We're broadcasting live from Miami, Florida right now. Trust me, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in Miami, Florida right now, too, when it comes to economic injustice. It's kind of bananas. But since I don't have any guests on from Miami, I'm not going to try to talk about what's going on in Miami. We're going to stick with where we are, where we wanted to be tonight. And, you know, as always, we talk about a couple of different questions that we want people to engage in. We want people, you who are listening, to talk to us about. So if you're ready to jump into this conversation, we want this to be a group conversation from the beginning. So if you're listening and you want your voice heard, we want you to press 1 right now. When we see that light up on the switchboard, Mama, we're bringing them on and we're going to get this conversation going in like 2 minutes. So here's the first question, because some of y'all may not want to press 1 right now because you're like, I don't know if I'm going to press 1 and then they ask me some stuff I don't know. You're going to know this. What does economic justice look like in the church? That's the first question. What does economic justice look like? And let me scratch the church, because that's not what God gave me. What does economic justice look like in your church? Y-O-U-R, your church? Everybody can deal with that. And the second question is, this one, I was talking to Evangelist Moore a little while earlier. I said, this one right here going to be heavy, mama. What does economic injustice look like in your church? Your church, not my church, your church. See, that's why this thing has to be kind of personal now, because if you are a part of a church, I can't say what's going on as far as inside of your church because I'm not there. But you know. And the reason we're posing those two questions from the beginning, mama, is for this reason.
Yes.
I got a third question, and I know I don't do that often, mama, but here's the third question, and this one is different. This one right here is going to slap somebody in the face. What does it say to the faith community, particularly? I say really the community, but what does it say particularly to the faith community? Take it however you want to take it, faith community or just regular community. What does it say to the faith community when or if you can't see it or describe it? If you as a person within God's church, within your church, whatever your church name is, if you as an individual, if you can't see economic justice, if you can't see economic injustice, what does that say to the faith community? Whew. Jesus, we have a lot of people that are listening right now. We got one brave soul so far, Mama. We got Evangelist Moore on the line with us. Evangelist Moore, we are glad that you're here. I'm not going to start calling folk out tonight, but listen, let's just, I'm going to give you a minute or so, and I'm going to give Mama a minute or so, and we're going to let a couple other brave souls jump into this conversation slash dialogue. But take one of them for us, if you will. Matter of fact, what does it say? Just let me hear your brief comments on that third part. You know, what does it say to the community, the communities that we serve, the communities outside of the four walls of our church, or the faith community, I'm a Baptist, if I was, and then all the Baptist churches. What does it say to that type of community, or my Pentecostal community, or my Presbyterian community? What does it say when or if we can't see it?
I think, if I may, first and foremost, good evening, everybody, and those who are joining in. Good evening to you, and I pray that God has blessed you on today, because today is what matters right now. I would say that third question is something to say, but I can say it like this: faith without works is dead. That is honestly one that is the first thing that came to my mind when you said that faith without works is dead. It doesn't matter what your denomination is. The Bible is always going to be the same. It's the same scripture in any church, no matter what their domination may be that they want to go by. Faith without works is dead. So if we cannot talk, if we can't talk about these issues, if we can't bring them in the pulpit and make them become a reality for the people and start to teach the people this, and then the people start to receive it, but even with themselves, they take it and say, hey, this is what we need to be doing. You can sit inside the four walls of a church and talk about economic injustice or economic justice within the church, but when you come outside the church, you're on a faith walk. You're believing in God. You're telling all of these people why they should follow you, but are you showing them why they should be following you? Are you being that example? And so if we're going to do it, and if we're going to walk by faith and not by sight, then we have to be that example. So at the end of the day, faith without works is dead.
Mama, go ahead and take your stab.
I just followed
take
that one. Oh, gosh, okay. Well, she just really, to me, summed it up. But I can add, basically saying the same thing, just in my words, that if people, I'll say in the church, if the members come to the church, that's in the church, need some help, and they can never get the help in the church because the church won't, in other words, the church won't help this person because they send them to other resources all the time, you know. And so sometimes they don't have cars, they don't have transportation. If it's the young people that are working, mostly everybody is working during the day, and it's really a hindrance because it's like, why do I bother to go ask? Because they're going to send me here and there, and I don't have transportation to go here and there.
That's
I don't have transportation,
true.
So it looks as though, you know, I just can't get no help. And then people do, you know. No, we are just human, and when we're going through, you know, people sometimes expect us to be the super, you know, because we have a title. We are still a human being. We're still under the word, and we have to go through the process like everyone else. But when you're going through, you are at your weakness. You know, say if your light's going to be cut off, you've done everything that you could do, but you just things just happen, and now they're saying, well, you know, send the person to the secretary and say, no, she'll give you the address of where you can go, and then when you get there, they'll say, we don't have any more funds.
Okay, so here's what I'm gonna do, because I got to set some ground rules. Because remember the questions that we're talking about tonight, the questions we're responding to tonight, and Laura, I'm coming to you next, is what does economic justice look like in your church? Can't talk about nobody else's church tonight.
Mm-hmm.
What does economic injustice look like in your church? Or you can say, if you're not a member of a church right now, you can talk about the last church that you were a part of. But you can't go outside of those parameters. And let me tell you why. Because once you go outside of those parameters, then we're just talking in general. We've had three conversations so far this month. So now we're narrowing this thing down. We're bringing this thing to a close in two more weeks. So we have to start talking about some specific things, because if you don't get specific, then we'll be just like some news media. They're just talking in general. They don't want to deal with what's going on in Charlottesville. They want to talk about what's going on in some other place. So, and so I'm gonna bring Laura into the conversation right now. So, Laura, we got Miss Laura on the phone with us. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, thank you.
All right. So you heard the ground rules. So you got three things you can respond to initially. What does it look like in your church? What does economic injustice look like in your church? Or what does it say to the faith community when or if you can't see it or you can't describe where there is economic justice going on or not?
Well, so let me, I guess I preface this. Right now I'm at in a military setting, in a military chapel, and, you know, which is
okay.
Great. So what I see in that setting, because I think it reaches out to the community, is two things. There are some systems that are set up for issues, you know, for financial issues that come about. But like at, with the chapel or with my home church, I want to say I take it down to that there may be some resources available within the chapel in my local church. But it's the maybe pride of the person or of the community. So often in the churches that I've attended, it's if you're living right, quote unquote living right, then you're going to be blessed and you won't need these resources. So it's really hard then to kind of turn around and say, man, I'm reading my word, I'm loving the Lord, I'm working as hard as I can, you know, and my lights are about to be turned off. So what I find is sometimes in the church that I've been in, yeah, resources are there, but that being able to say I'm still in the situation, because is the faith going to be questioned?
You know what I think is interesting? Go ahead.
No, that's Go right ahead.
Here's what I think is interesting. A lot of, and this is why we have to have this conversation tonight, because so much of the responses, and I think what you all three have said, represent a very large segment of people in various churches. Because when you hear the word economic, right, when we talk about economic justice, then the only thing that ever comes up is the money part. And I just remind people about what does PRF stand for: possessions, resources, and finances. And so with PRF, we deal with the relationship between all three of those three areas that's relative to everybody's life. You can have a whole lot of money and don't have no resources at all. Or you can have the wrong resources and your money can be just dwindling away. Because if you believe you're making a good investment with your money, and you believe that this person is a good resource for you because this person works in the financial area, and you start dumping all your money into that particular area, and then you find out that that person, you watch that joke on American Greed, or you being interviewed on American Greed because they done took you, then having that money just really didn't do anything because you didn't capitalize on it. And so I'm going to press everybody to thinking a little bit further when we talk about economic justice or economic injustice, to not just thinking about just the money piece. I'm going to also press everybody to not focusing so much on people who just don't have things, who are broke. Because, see, if that's the only way we're having the conversation, then what does that say when we're dealing when PRF goes into a particular church or a community, and that community does not have any quote-unquote financial problems? I remember there was one church that invited us or accepted an invitation from us, and the pastor, he took our financial ministry needs assessment, we call them FMNAs. He took those assessments, he gave them to the people, they dealt with filling them out during his Sunday school 1 week. And then he provided the results back to us, or the forms back to us, and we calculated and we looked at all of the data. And when I went back to interview him specifically, this is when I was just doing research, he told me, he said, money is not the issue in my church. That church did not have any financial problems at all. The people didn't have any financial problems at all. So if we're going to talk about economic justice or injustice, then you would think economic justice, making sure everybody has, you know, equitable amount of money, able to survive, take care of the bills, things like that. But if you say economic injustice, well, somebody doesn't have any money, people are poor, whatever the case may be. Here's what the issue that would have come up under economic justice for that particular church. Mostly everybody in that church, or the greatest majority of people in that church, were all retired. The pastor's concern, because of what kept coming to the people or coming to the pastor through the people, was how people were trying to take advantage of them because of their age. Mm. That is a very different visual, if you will, of economic justice or injustice. That's not what normally happens. That's what a whole bunch of churches just don't have to deal with. You see what I'm saying? So that's why I'm trying to make this conversation. I'm going to ask everybody just to mute on your end, if you will. But that's what part of this conversation tonight is being specific in different areas so people can hear those things. And then hopefully we'll have some other brave souls that don't have some of the issues that I know certain churches have about, like what Mama was talking about. People don't have anything, and then they keep getting sent to other locations and get to run around while they're trying to deal with things. There's a scripture that I really want us to focus on just for tonight, and that's out of Matthew 25. Again, the thing that I love about God's word is it's not like everybody's going to get it the first time, and it's kind of clear to me that sometimes you got to keep going over the same thing until people get it, right? I love it when when in Matthew 25, verses 31 to 46, if I'm not mistaken, but it talked about the sheep and the goats. I brought it up last week. And it says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he'll sit on his glorious throne and all the nations will be gathered before him. That's accountability. And then it says, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep and the goat, sheep and goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. And so here's the bottom line. Bottom line is, where are you sitting on this matter or on these matters of economic justice? And if you continue reading, the king said to ones that were on the right, which were the sheep, right? Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, and that's eternal inheritance, the kingdom that's prepared for you since the creation of the world. When I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I need clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you came to look after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. And then the righteous answered him and said, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when did we see you as a stranger and invite you in? And when did we see you was in need of clothing and we clothed you? When did we see you sick or in prison and went to visit you? And the king said, truly I tell you, whatever you did for the least of these, my brothers and my sisters, you did it for me. Now, this is where I want us to have the conversation, because y'all know that is very dear and near to me, that there's a lot of things that we can look out among the communities of faith where we live, where we serve, and all of us probably can say there's some things that we can probably do better. Is anybody disagreeing? When you look out wherever you are, wherever everybody who's listening, there's some things that we probably can really do better. So now my question is, how do we deal with this thing? How do we deal with what you talked about, Mom, or what you talked about, Evangelist Moore, or Laura? How do we deal with what we see as, if we're talking about issues? How do we deal with that? Or do we just continue to go to church every Sunday, get happy during the worship experience, and then come on, put on Facebook after church is over, Pastor, preacher, he preached today. Pastor really preached a good word today. Is that the extent of how we're dealing with what people need? I mean, where do we go from here? Especially since we got two more weeks of economic injustice to talk about.
If I may, I want to say that I think where we go from here is we take out that time. I know a lot of people have busy lives, very understandable. I think that if we, as a people, as Christians within our churches, or your church may not be the church that's having the issues or whatnot as far as when it comes to the finances, but there are other issues within the church, and I can say one being spiritual growth. I have, since I've been down here in Georgia, and the churches that I have attended down here, one thing that I have noticed is that there is not so much as the financial issues that I have come across, but the spiritual growth. And there's a lot of people who are truly hungry for the Word of God. They don't necessarily know, and that's part of the, you know, being able to teach someone something and the people receiving. When we talked about that last week, and I made the statement of saying, you know, people have to be able to receive. You know, sometimes people don't want to receive things, especially if it's hidden home to them. But at the end of the day, I think if we could take out time, and I will say we, because I will put myself in there as well. If we can just take out that time to, whether it is have Bible study with someone, even if it's just one person, I believe that a lot of people think that there needs to be more than one in order for them to do something, and that's not true. Even if it's just one person, God will multiply if that is what needs to be done, he will send the people. But if there is one soul that can be saved and to be able to go and mature in the word of God so that they can now go off and share with other people and you start to see them grow, I think that's somewhere that people can actually start in the church, is start find out where people are and, you know, what service can you offer unto them. I do know that a lot of times what I've seen in the church, and I can say here, the churches that I've actually been in, I'm not seeing a lot of leadership take time to call someone. And this is what I've heard from people who have had encounters with me, who have called me and said, "Hey, you know, Miss K or Evangelist or Miss Kia," whichever they're comfortable with calling me, they would, you know, say, "Can I talk to you? Do you have a moment?" or whatnot. I make myself available for people. That is something that I wanted for myself, and so I wanted to always make sure that that was something that I could do for others, because that's something that I had wanted during my time of growing in God. Is make yourself available to someone. That's part of faith without works is dead. I mean, if we're going to say that we are, you know, walking by faith and we're doing what God said we do, then sometimes we're the only Jesus that people really, really going to see. Because if they're looking at their leaders and they're not seeing that, then they have a state of confusion. And we know God is not the author of confusion. But there's a lot of favoritism, I want to say. As you were talking, the Spirit was talking to me about favoritism in James chapter 2. It talks about favoritism. A lot of people get pushed back in the church when they, and I've seen this, everything that I'm talking about is things that I've witnessed, that I've seen in my own churches that I've attended. Mm-hmm. And so forgive me if I say the churches, I'm really talking about, these are things that I've seen in the churches that I've actually belonged to. I've seen the favoritism. I've seen the people being pushed back because they didn't look the part or because they didn't have the tithe that people thought they should have had, or they didn't know scripture the way that they felt they should have known scripture. And they just got pushed back to the side because they, according to leadership, they didn't look that way. They didn't act this way. They didn't come with all of these things. But the church is supposed to be a place for the sick, the hospital. This is where you come to get healed. And if we can't come in and receive love, because a lot of people are hurting. They're hurting. So they're looking for love. They're looking for somebody to, you know, to embrace them and to show them, "I've done everything out here in the world. Now I'm here. Am I going to get the same thing inside this building that I was getting out there, or am I going to get different?" So I honestly would say to sum all of that up, to talk about some of the injustice part of what it looks like in my church, I would have to say it is a lot of spiritual healing, a lot of spiritual growth. People need that, and they're not getting it because sometimes we don't recognize when somebody is really standing in a need because, one, they're not looking the part, they don't act the part, and when it comes to, you know, leadership, they look for them to give monetarily, and if they don't have that, they kind of push people back to the side. And now this sheep, if you will, just went astray and got lost again.
So one of the things that you mentioned was about leaders making themselves available and taking the time. So I'm get ready to close this first half hour out, but let me throw this in there because that's important. a lot of the things that I can speak specifically to, things that I see day in and day out, that show to me economic injustice that's going on within the church, is because a lot of leaders are unable to witness it or to be able to see it or recognize it because they're not that up close and personal with it. So when you're not up close and personal with something, it's easy for you to miss it, especially if you're not asking for it. Now, I'm going to shift and I'm going to make a hard left so everybody else can start jumping in the conversation, because I'm going to bring up something in this next 30 minutes. I'm going to bring up a topic that everybody likes to talk about in the church. Now, the questions for those who jumped on since we've been started was, one, what does economic justice look like in your church? Two, what does economic injustice look like in your church? And three, to sum that up, the question is, what does it say to the community? What does it say to the faith community when you can't see it or describe it? Or if you can't see it or describe it? And there's more. You brought up the part of taking the time, that the leaders have to take the time, make themselves available. But I'm going to add something to that, my sister. Doggone it. Those of us who call ourselves church members, that's my family. You got postings all on Facebook about everything that's going on. You got to be able to see it. It's 200 folks in your church, mama. Somebody in your church out of 200 folks should be able to see if there is an economic injustice going on with another member, if it's open, if it's out in the open. Now, here's the thing. If it's stuff going on behind the scenes, I can't really address that because it's going on behind the scenes. However, if you're in those circles, and I'm going to move on, if you're in those circles within the church, we all know that there's various circles. Mark would tell us this. There's various circles within the church. You know, if you are the pastor or you hold a specific position, you have people around you, regardless of what position that you hold, especially if it's a leadership position. And then that circle of confidence, y'all are starting already. Here they go. I knew I was about to say something. When I hit that topic, they really going to come. And then you got people that are around them. So I may have two people around me that I'm confiding in that knows about certain things going on. And then there may be five people outside of that. And then, you know, you go to, you know, 25 people. But the farther you go out, the less connected we all are. And so I don't even fault necessarily individual leaders. I fault the people. I fault everybody, y'all, because there should be somebody that should be looking for these things. There is no way in the world that I'm communicating with as many people as I am, from pastors all the way down to people in the church, from, like they say, from the choir stand to the door. Ain't no way in the world I'm in communication with all that, with all these many folks, and other people don't know that they're going through some of the stuff that they're going through. Let me bring Brother Mark in, because I must have said something that sparked him.
How you guys doing?
Oh, Mark, we're doing good, brother.
Good. Well, I mean, it started back with the comment with Evangelist Moore, and right now, currently, I'm not a member of a church, but I can go back to the last one that I went to. There was a lot of inconsistency. The lack thereof is what I'm talking about. There was a lot of inconsistency in the church. The ministry itself was not stable. It moved various times because of financial situations, and it goes back to, like you said, about the leaders making themselves available. I remember vividly having to have a discussion with the leaders in the church because my wife and myself were over the finances, and there were several times where we're the last ones to leave the church, and when I opened the door to come out into the sanctuary, we had several members that did not have cars. And those members are still sitting there. So we got to take them home. And so I called a meeting with the members, with the leaders. And I told them, I said, why? Everybody in here knows that specific families do not have means of transportation. Why should I be the last person to push the door open to get ready to leave, and that family is sitting there waiting for us to take them home? When every one of you guys have cars, know that they didn't have a way home, and did not even offer a ride to them. So it was something you had to, it was something I had to call them to the carpet about. But I also held their feet to the fire too, the ones that needed the ride, because I was going to pick them up. I get up at 5:30 in the morning. I have to go clean across town, way out of the way, to pick them up and to bring them. When the bus had a stop right there in front of the ministry, and so I told him, I said, look, what you need to do is purchase a bus pass. I don't have a problem taking you home. I said, the problem I have is I worked all day, and I got to come across town to get you. All you do is press a button and wait, and I got to fight traffic to get across town, get back here and open this place up and get it ready. I said, so what I need you to do, to find out how much a bus pass is, purchase the bus pass, get dropped off here, and then some of us will take you home. So I had to, mm-hmm. I had to give him some responsibility, but I also had to give some to the leaders. And you're right. It's about making the leaders, about making themselves available. And there's danger in that, because honestly, there are leaders that know that certain leaders will make themselves available, and they will work them, and they will just basically overwork them is what they'll do. It's some danger in that, because I can honestly say that we were well overworked. To the point of getting phone calls 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Just the leaders making themselves available, Evangelist Moore, that's key. That's something that I had to deal with. I'll just put it like that.
Mm-hmm. That was good.
Let me throw something out there. So, just as a reminder, when we talk about justice, we're talking about, I mean, you can look and find different definitions. You can find different scriptures that talk about justice. Micah 6:8. You can look in Isaiah 58. Distribution is important. I talked about the four components before, and I want to constantly highlight those so people can constantly hear them. So we're dealing with distribution. How is whatever being distributed? We talk about power, right? Who has the ability to make certain decisions so that we can deal with certain conflicts, right? So, for example, Moses in Exodus 18, Moses was exercising his power. It was legitimate power, but it took somebody like Jethro to say, hey, bro, you're wearing yourself out and the people. You can't do it all. And he was, mm-hmm. and what he was doing was administering justice, because people were bringing their issues to him, day and night, and it wore him out. So he was believing he was doing the right thing until somebody helped him to be able to see it. So I like, and I want to make sure that people hear the practicality that I know was backed with the Jesus love ethic. Y'all heard me say it before, that Jesus love ethic is love thy neighbor as thyself. Right? That's what Jesus said to do, right? Or love ye one another. I mean, it's not rocket science. We know that these are relative scriptures that we are supposed to be following, right? So what you did, Brother Mark, was you administered, you used the power that you had. And I like that, because you were the pastor. So that should mm-hmm. help a whole lot of folks that's listening. You can help and deal with these things of economic justice and or injustice within your church, even though you're not the pastor. The other part of it was, when it comes to accountability, see, we want lots of, let me tell you what I tell my students in my criminal justice class when I'm teaching them. One of the first questions I ask them when we start a new class is the system fair? That's what I ask them. Is the system fair? And mostly everybody always says the system is not fair. So I get real simple and stupid with them at the same time. I said, listen, let me ask y'all a question. I said, how many of y'all drove the speed limit every time you went somewhere today, from the time you left your house early this morning up until the time you came to class? How many of y'all can say you honestly did not break the speed limit not one time? How many of you can actually say that you actually stopped at every stop sign and do a rolling stop, but I'm talking about you stop to where the back of your car goes down, and then you go. I mean, And everybody always raises their hand, everybody, and says they've done something, right? I said, now, how many of y'all, because now you've admitted to breaking the law, how many of y'all going to go down to the police station right now and go and tell them what you did so you can face your justice?
Wow.
Again, I get simple and stupid with them at the same time. Nobody does that. So the big thing is, do people really want justice? And that's why that third question is out there for us to talk about. What does it say to the faith community when, or if you can't see it, if you can't describe it, if you don't know what justice is, if you don't know what injustice is, if you see these things going on inside of your church and they look like they're normal. Let me give you a perfect example. Now I'm about to get real crazy with it. Brother Mark, I think you were on this text that I sent. I said, it was something dealing with, is it fair? Is it just? Is it right? Is it just? Is it fair? Is it right for me to stand up in the pulpit as your pastor, minister, whatever title it is, and ask you to give, knowing that you're struggling? Is it fair for me to do that? And I know you're struggling. See, you came to my office, Brother Mark. You've been coming to my office, and I've been trying to hook you up with PRF, and you've been moving along, but I know you just ain't got it.
Uh-huh.
But yet I say, God wants all y'all to give. Now, I'm about to get real crazy with it, and I want everybody just to think about, if we're all bringing it to the storehouse, the purpose of the storehouse is to make sure that that when it's a need, that need can be met.
Uh-huh.
See, so many people want to deal with one of our foundational scriptures for PRF, y'all know, is Acts chapter 2, 42 to 47, right? And you know within there it said that those who had property and land, they sold their possessions and took the money and brought the money to the apostles so that everyone had need, that their needs would be met, right? That's why they gave it to them. Now, what you don't get into that text is when it doesn't say who had the need. It just says, for those who had need. It doesn't say that they sold it at the time that the need came up, which lets me know that that's a continuation of how they were raised, all the way going back from when they first got this in Deuteronomy. I hear somebody turning some pages. I know you're going to look at it. I knew he was going to get somebody in this one. So that's Acts chapter 2, but it goes back to Deuteronomy chapter 14 when God started talking about, the giving of tithes. So why do they have it in their mind? Because it's been taught to them, Sister Moore. It was part of some spiritual growth before they got to the promised land. And so these things started to flow through the generations because God said, if you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 12, Deuteronomy chapter 12 really sets the tone. God was not playing with them. He didn't say this is just something that you're supposed to do one day or anything like that. It says, these are the decrees and the regulations that you must be careful to obey, if that's how it says it. Be careful to obey when you live in a land that the Lord God, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. So the whole big thing is you can't do nothing until God gives it to you.
That's true.
Then he says you must obey them as long as you may live. So that means as long as I'm living, I need to obey what God has said in his command. And then at the end of chapter 12, we talk about a bookend, the 32nd verse, so be careful to obey all the commands I give you. He says you must not take away anything from them or add from them. So if this is how God says that we're supposed to do something, right, whatever that thing is that he says we're supposed to do, here's the reality. And we're supposed to do it. Now, if we don't do it, then we can't complain and cry economic justice foul and try to shoot three free throws because things didn't go our way. No, you're just not aligned with the way that God said that it's supposed to happen. Now, going back to that statement, y'all jump in when you want to, but going back to that statement about, I know that somebody's struggling, but yet I'm still asking them, you can't get blood for a turnip. You can't get blood out of a turnip. You just can't do it. But there has to be something inherently wrong if I'm constantly asking you to give, knowing what your situation is. because let me just slap some. If you go over to for God so loves 2 Corinthians 9, I believe, for God so loves a cheerful giver.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is it 2 Corinthians 9? Y'all help me out. Y'all know what I'm talking about. It's either 1st or 2 Corinthians chapter 9. For God so loves a cheerful giver. You hear that so much in church. But you don't read from, see, nobody goes and reads what happened beforehand. That's why you got to understand things in context. It's going to free somebody tonight. In chapter 8, it says, as you give, your giving should not be, you should give, but your giving should not be so much that it hurts you.
That's exactly right.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, that's not Dunlap. That's not Dr. Dunlap. This is what the Word of God says. So if you're going to take the conversation, take the whole dialogue. People are trying to take conversation, but now they're trying to deal with the dialogue. Dialogue is the more intensive part of what you and I are talking about. So that means if you are struggling and you're giving, but you really don't have it to give, and you mess up, oh my goodness, when God releases me to deal with credit and debt of first cousins next year, everybody that gets on that train is going to be straight, I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I'll throw a tidbit in there, just to sweeten the pot. If I can't pay my bills, and I went out there and I purchased a car, but for whatever reason, I didn't have enough savings, whatever the case is, I'm struggling. But yet, Brother Mark, you the pastor, and you tell me, no, I need to give, and you're compelling me to give out of compulsion. Well, that's already outside of the will of God. But the other part of it is that, and this is one of the things that we teach, that's why a lot of folks may not want to get it, but that's all right, because I'm going to put it in the book, and then folks are going to get it, then they're going to start doing what they're supposed to do. If I borrow money from you, Sister Moore,
mm-hmm.
and I don't pay it back, and it was a loan, and I borrow money from Mama, I purchased a car from Mama's car lot, and I don't pay that bill back on time, but yet I come to the house of God, and I just feel that I have to give to the house of God. Jesus' love ethic says, love thy neighbor as thyself, love ye one another. So that means, are you telling me that I should give to the house of God, but I should mess over Mama at her car lot? I should mess over Sister Moore and not pay her back because I borrowed this money. I didn't ask her to give it to me. I borrowed it. It means that there's an obligation there, which means that there was some relationship there that was put in place for her to give me the money, for Mama to co-sign on the car loan for me. But yet I'm going to neglect them, the people who I see, to give to an institution.
Hmm.
Somebody's scratching their head. I know they are. So watch this. And however we go tonight, however long we go. So let's deal with tithing. Real brief. And I know, Mark, I know I ain't going to do no justice to it tonight, but that's good. Maybe they'll come back next week and get some more. Economic injustice. One of the greatest economic injustices that I know about is people that constantly give to church, not to the kingdom, to give to church. To see if you dealt with it as giving to the kingdom, then your giving may not include giving to your church. Okay.
Mercy.
Because as soon as you say that kingdom is your church, then you box kingdom into your four walls of your church.
Woo.
Okay. So when it comes to tithing, the first thing people got to really understand about tithing was when God gave this command, again, I read you to Deuteronomy chapter 12. So Deuteronomy 12, 13, 14, 15, those were all part of the same conversation. So when God said in 12:1 and 12:32, it didn't go away when he got to chapter 14. You know why? Because there was no chapter 14 when God spoke this. Chapter 14 came from when man decided to put a number on top of it to separate it so he can put it in a book. So God says, I want you to set aside your crops. I want you to set aside a tenth every year. And then he says, I want you to bring it to the designated place of worship, the place that the Lord your God chooses for his name to be honored, Now, here's where people mess up with tithing. And this is what causes a little bit of economic injustice, I believe. Because when all you do is bring your tithe to the designated place of worship, but you stop there because you're expecting God to give you something, you have a misunderstanding of the verse. Because the verse doesn't stop there about just bring your tithes. Now I'm going to go around the room. I'll go around the table right now. Brother Mark, you've heard bring the tithe to the church, right? You've heard that, right?
Yes, I have.
Sister Moore, you've heard we're supposed to bring the tithe to the church, right? Sister Laura, you've heard bring the tithe.
Absolutely.
Mama, you've heard bring the tithe. All right?
Yes.
So let me ask you this. Economic injustice, again, let's deal with justice. Justice is about power. It's about equity. It's about rights. It's about distribution. So when I am the one who has the power that is controlling what you're doing, such as bringing it to here, then I need to be making sure that there is equity in that. Well, we don't have to worry about that too much, right? Because if everybody brings a tenth, then God will bless all those tenths and we should be good.
Correct.
But the issue comes when we start talking about distribution. Because once something comes in, what happens when it comes in? Well, here's what God says. Eat it there in his presence.
Wow.
Hold on. What you say, Brother Dunlap? Yeah, it says bring the tithe to the designated place of worship, the place that the Lord your God chooses for his name to be honored, and eat it there in his presence. Well, hold on. What does that mean? That means when you bring your corn, when you bring your crops, when you bring your cattle, when you bring your sheep, when you bring it, you eat it there in his presence. Why? Because you brought it to the place where he chose for it to be. Now, here's what you got to understand. In the promised land, everybody didn't live in one household. There was 12 tribes. So therefore, when they went into the promised land, everybody had their own little area within the land of Canaan. And so once a year, what happened? Once a year, they brought the tithe to that one place where God said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to bring it to this one place. That's a good place of worship when everybody's bringing something. Here's the beauty of it. Nobody brought any more than anybody else. So how can we have justice in the church when everybody's bringing something different? If everybody's bringing something different than what you do, now you put yourself into a position of where now there's definitely never going to be equity. And how do we know that there's not equity? There's no equity, Sister Moore, probably where you was at. I'm being presumptuous. Y'all correct me if I'm wrong, or somebody else can, but it's fine. But Sister Moore, Brother Mark, Mama, here's where you know there's not equity. Because if you go back to your pastor, if you go back to the person in the finance room and you ask this question, what percentage of the members tithe? Here's what you're going to get. You're going to get in most places, I won't say most because I don't know, I can't be presumptuous, but I can guarantee you that in a lot of places, you're going to hear 7 to 10%, 7 to 15%. You're not going to get in so many places that 80% of the people that are in the church tithe. Because it's a common phenomenon. So watch this. If 7% of the people tithe in your church, that means everybody's not doing an equitable amount of giving, tithing, right?
That's correct.
Here's the economic injustice. It goes back to what you said, Sister Moore, the spiritual growth. If you're not teaching on tithing, if you don't bring PRF in to teach about tithing from a biblical perspective, not to get more money into your church with yourself behind, but if you're doing it the right way for the right doggone reasons, then what we're going to do is help you to get to that place where we're all doing what we're supposed to do. But here's the difference between the church of today and what you read in the text. You read in the text what you read in the text because everybody, oh goodness, because everybody read, everybody, you just mute your lines, if you will, for the back noise. Here's what we know, that everybody went into the promised land at those various times. So here's what you didn't have. You didn't have the tribe of Judah. 15 people, you didn't have 50% of them from the tribe of Judah going in and setting up camp. And then 2 months later, the other 50% of those from the tribe of Judah went and set up camp. Everybody went into Israel, into the land of Canaan, in their own tribe, to their own location, which makes it so difficult to actually live this thing out from an economic justice point of view, because people are coming into the church at different points of their lives. People are coming into the church. Everybody started off at the same level. We're all here together. We all heard the same word together. So if you deviated from that word that I just read to you, and now you're wrong, and guess what they would have done? They would have dealt with each other. That would have been justice. Hold on, listen, you in my household. Mark, you one of my sons. I know I'm 100 years old. And I know you're 50 and you got your own family, but you still one of my sons. You still carry my name. So you can't be cheating God. Talking about we still going to roll to that place and you bringing 5%. Like everybody don't know it. Everybody know what you do. They see your crops. They see your cattle. That's how economic injustices continue to flourish within so many churches, because people hide in the shadows. And because they hide in the shadows, nobody knows what's going on. So how can you see it, going back to the third question, what does it say to the faith community if you can't see it, if you can't describe it? Most people don't know how many people do not tithe in the church, in whatever that church is, if you believe in it, right? Some churches don't believe in it, that's fine, I'm not getting on that. But if that those churches that believe in tithing, everybody doesn't see that. So the question is, are you going to allow? See, it's not an economic injustice because everybody can't afford, quote unquote, to tithe, but it's an economic injustice when you know about it and you don't do a doggone thing about it.
Yeah, I want to add something to that, Dunlap, as well. Okay. And I'm going to read it from Matthew 23. Jesus was talking to the scribes and the Pharisees, and this is what happened because, like you said, when you actually go back, I've been a member, and I've been in the finance department for many, many years in a couple of different ministries. You have a very small percentage of people that actually tithe in the church, and it's so small. And that particular percentage, those people carry the church, and the men and women of God know that for a fact. But Christ was speaking to them. And I'm just going to, he was speaking to the scribes and the Pharisees, but I'm going to start at verse 3, and he says, so do and observe whatever they tell you, but do not the works they do. For they preach, but do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on the people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with a finger, basically to help. And that's what happens a lot of times. They know that it's a very small percentage that carry the church, and the leaders of the church, they will put those burdens on those particular people. I've been on that side of it, and I know that to be a fact. Being on the finance committee, and I'll be honest with you, there were things that my wife and I purchased for the ministry, and the people would come in and they would just see the stuff. They never knew where it came from. They came in and they saw big screen television, not knowing that that came from my household. They came in and seen new drums, electric drums, all this stuff, not knowing that it came from my household. They come in and they see a new church van, not knowing that it come from my household. And I haven't said anything to any of them. And even to this day, they don't know that. But the man of God knew it. But at the same time, would also call and would also ask for a lot of money. Knowing what was coming out of our household already. So I'm just using that as an example to say that most of the men and women of God knows the families that carry the ministry financially. And they will continue to tack on and tack on and tack on to them.
I want to elaborate on something Pastor Mark said when he says that they know the people that, and he's very true. It's so true when he say that. I had a situation, but it's just a little bit different. And mine was I want to say this. Everybody is looking for prophecy. That's one thing when it comes to finances. A lot of people are they're walking to find out who's going to prophesy finances to them so that they can give. Mm-hmm. That does cause a lot of people to want to give because somebody just prophesied that you have riches all around you or great wealth around you. And so people mm-hmm. start to give without seeking the face of the Lord to find out what they're supposed to be doing and giving as well. I will say that there's a ministry that I was involved in, one ministry that I truly was involved in. The Lord had told me like they were my assignment to go and be of a help to them, to pray for them and whatnot. And so I did those things. I was told that the only way that I could be a leader in this ministry is that you had to give so much in tithe and offering. And I don't have a problem with paying my tithes and offering. I don't have a problem with it at all. But then it was said to me, you're carrying us financially, so we're waiting for you to bring all the finances in here. And when I heard that, it gave me pause, and I said, well, Lord, if this is the only reason why you have me here, I need you to show me what to do, because I've never had anybody say, in order for you to do anything in the ministry, you have to bring all your finances to us. And something had took place. Something happened personally for me, and the church was nowhere to be found. They were nowhere to be found. They had even asked me, they said, well, you know, are you okay? And when I told them the situation, and when I said, you know, I might need some, you know, some help here or there, they said, well, we'll just be praying for you. We'll be praying, you know, that God will send you what you mm-hmm. need and you won't mm-hmm. lack nowhere and do all of these things. And I thought to myself, you know, I can put myself in this situation. I thought to myself, I said, God, if this is what it's supposed to be about, I don't want no parts of this. That's because I don't, mm-hmm. I've never been that person that if someone, I know that someone was in a need, I'm going to help you with whatever I can help you with. If that's, you know, be it you need to come to my home for a little while, or I need to pick you up, get you to work, or drop you, get you to the church, give you extra furniture, you know, if I have it in my home, whatever it is that I'm able to help someone with, I've learned to ask the Lord, you know, is it okay? Because I don't want to mess with anything that God is doing. But I have been on that end of where you're giving and then you can't get anything from the church in return. And it could be as just simple as I just need somebody to, you know, just come and see about me, pray with me. So all of those things, you know, it's not so much as are you going to monetarily give back to me, but why is it that you're seeking so much from me to carry and say that I'm the one that's supposed to carry the church. When you have many of people, we should be teaching people how to give, the proper way to give, but also how to even deal with their own finances in their own homes once they leave the church, because it's the only reason why you're giving unto the church when that subject comes up, when it's time to give. If the only reason why you're giving is because somebody told you you had to give, then all you're doing is expecting God to give you something in return. But did you ask God, is this the place that you're supposed to be giving your tithe into? Because he may want you to give it somewhere else.
Yes, Lord. So think about this, y'all. Think about how many people give, and we have two courses. We have refuse to give out of ignorance is one course that we teach, and then the other one is tithing out of law or love. So giving and tithing are two separate things. biblically, anybody can try to debate me on it, but you'll never win because the Bible is clear in many places other than one. So when it comes to giving, giving doesn't always have the same reciprocal benefits, if you will, as tithing does. So a lot of times it's more than people give, and then they expect when they give that something will be given back to them when they need help. But here's the reality. The reality is that oftentimes doesn't happen. And it goes back to what Mark said. He talked about the inconsistencies in the church. Well, if you got inconsistencies in the church about who gets help and who doesn't get help, then I'm going to say that you may not be, if you're the leader or leaders, then you may not be administering economic justice the right way. You may be administering justice, but I'm not going to say you're being unjust because you may not know about it. But if you're not dealing with the equity part, if it's not fair across the board, here goes another example. Again, I want people to evaluate what's going on in your church. If you hear that a funeral cannot happen, I know I'm about to slap some Baptists in the mouth. That's fine. Blame it on God. But how many times have you heard, Brother Mark? Let me clarify. In some of the Black Baptist Southern communities, such and such didn't pay tithes, so they can't have a funeral here.
Oh yeah.
Such and such didn't pay tithes, so we can't help them. We can't help that widow because he stopped coming to the church long ago. He didn't pay his dues. These are things that everybody doesn't get. Everybody doesn't hear that. But when you do hear it, how do you address it? I will say to anybody, if this is what you're hearing, then you are part of the economic injustice that's going on in your church. In the same way that something happens to another, why should it not happen to you when you have the opportunity to do something about it and you choose not to? Throw a rock, hide your hand. Talk about it, post it on Facebook, but you ain't going to say nothing to the pastor when you know it's wrong. You ain't going to say nothing to the deacon to say that, but you're not. But so never. I pray that you never get into a situation where you're not able to, quote-unquote, pay your tithes, where you can't, quote-unquote, give your dues, and then you die, and then your widow or your widower is now back there saying, we need some help, but the same thing that you had an opportunity for, you didn't do it. And because you didn't do it, it comes back to you. That's not a good place to be. Not a good place to be.
Wow.
Let me go one more place and it's relevant. It's relevant. Just what you just one of the things that you said, Sister Moore. When it comes to tithing, it's so important that there's a differentiation between tithing and giving. Now, here's what we have to understand about tithing. When you read the scripture about what they were supposed to tithe, money was secondary when it came to tithing, according to scripture, according to God's command, right? It was secondary.
Mm-hmm.
But now in our Western culture society, somebody, and now we follow it, has made it the primary. I'm going to say that the biggest issue is when the primary doesn't look like, when the secondary has now become the primary, but the secondary don't look nothing like the primary. It's not being done with the same spirit as the primary. Because watch this. If what tithing is about was about the grain, the oil and the firstborn of your flock and the grain and the fruits and vegetables, if it was all about that, but yet if you weren't able to do it, not because you didn't have it, but because there was a specific reason why you couldn't bring your tithe to that place where God chose for his name to be honored, then you got an opportunity to deal with the money piece. So if you flip and you put the money piece first, then what's your secondary? So now the question becomes, if money is your primary, what's your secondary? What do you do when you don't have the money? What do you bring when you don't have the money? Here's where economic injustice comes into play, when the secondary is not honored in the same vein as the primary.
Yeah.
Let's say, for example, I get out there and I'm able to grow some collard greens or some carrots in the backyard. Do you know that they would go ape crazy if I brought some carrots and put it in an offering plate when it came time for tithes and offerings in church? They would go crazy.
Sure.
Because
tithing
has been relegated to money, and nothing else besides that actually equates. And you can't go time, talent, and resources. That foolishness. Let's just say that's foolishness, because the reality is anything that you say a tenth of, then you got to say what is it a tenth of. So if I say I'm going to give 10% of my time, talent, and resources, how do you measure 10% of your resources? It's just like, oh my God, I need to put this down. It's just like when you play Monopoly. Ooh. Mark, I don't know if you play Monopoly.
Oh, wow.
We're going to get a Monopoly game together, y'all, and I'm going to win because I always do. But listen, how it happens. This is how it happens with Monopoly. You remember when you pass those two cheap purples, right? Pass those two cheap purples, right? In Baltic Avenue, right? And then you get onto that one that says property tax 10%.
Yes.
Or pay $200 or 10%. Here's the deal. Most people would just pay that $200 because they just passed go and they just got $200. So it's oftentimes an even swap, no swindle. I'm not really losing anything because I just got it, so I can go ahead and get rid of it. But when you don't have the cash because you done decided to build up some of your properties, then now you have to think a little different. You have to be able to say, now, hold on now. I can't just I need that $200 because Brother Dunlap got all those light blues, and I need that cash. So I'm not going to be so quick to give up that $200 when I only got $250 in the bank.
Right.
So we got to have the mindset, and again, I'm not saying this. I'm not saying what has to be in anybody's church, but you got to have a system that works and that God is going to be pleased with. But if everything is just about the money, OJ, that ain't going to work, because we have so many people that continue to say that a small group of people, not just tithes, but a small percentage of people are the ones that's financing most of the many of the churches. So there's not equity.
That's right.
Listen,
that's right.
If there is a need within your own household, you got to understand, if you call yourself a tithing church, but you got folks within your own church that is hungry, then you got a problem. Justice is not being administered the right way, because you got people that are in your household that's hungry. And even God said, even God set up some parameters for some other folks other than the ones who had the ability to get the tithe and bring a tithe. He says at the end of every third year, bring the tithe of that year's harvest and store it in the nearest town. So watch this. So that means all y'all tell 12 tribes, now I want y'all to deal with not bringing it so that you can eat. You done ate the first year. You done ate the second year. You all right the third year. You can go without. Go ahead and take your tithe over to the nearest town. Oh, go ahead and take it to Richland, Mama. Go ahead and take it to Buena Vista, Evangelist Moore. Go take it to Crawford, Mark. Not you as an individual. See? Y'all do this. And who did he say give it to? The Levites? Oh, so hold on. Now we're about to smack a whole bunch of folk in the face. You mean that all the money wasn't supposed to be going? You mean that the leaders, the religious leaders, didn't get it from the rip, from the beginning? No, no, no. Them jokers had to wait till the third year to get that. So watch this. I challenge you. I guarantee you, if you go to your church, don't do it. Don't do it. Because if I ain't got, listen, I ain't no pastor like that, so I ain't got no church you can come to. PRF, we do our thing on the go. But you mess around and you recommend this in your board, in your board meeting, in your church conference. Look, we recommend paying the pastor every third Sunday. Because see, we need to eat. Nothing. Oh, hold on. We got to take care. Okay, well, what's the biblical basis for it? That goes into a whole other thing. But it wasn't just about them. Because, see, they didn't have any allotment to the land. The land wasn't for them. They were supposed to be receiving off the people and what the people did because of what God did for the people. But also, in addition to them, and Brother Mark, you know this, for the foreigners living in the land. So that means that means Atlanta, Georgia, Auburn Avenue. Hey, can you imagine if every week the church, one church every week, or a group of churches every week, made sure that people had a chance, had food to eat every day of the week in a city as big as Atlanta or Philly, where we got a homeless problem too, or a unsheltered, large unsheltered community, to be politically correct and respectful. If all of those churches in Philly, all those churches in Atlanta got together and said, we're going to come together and stop being separate, and we're going to be and act like the body is supposed to be, and we're going to figure out a way without having to be the bishop being in charge of this, and we're going to give it to somebody who has a heart for this to come up with some type of schedule to be able to say, okay, it's 12 churches on this one freaking block. So out of the 12 churches on this one freaking block around the corner from all these unsheltered individuals or people who are hungry, then here's what we can do. Church 1, 2, and 3, y'all feed them every day. And if you don't want to get out there, get some of your folks out there. But let it just be an effort between these three churches so they got something to eat every day. See, God is looking at a lot of folks and a lot of stuff going on. Like, you really think you're doing something? Let me tell you how I know God says, Joker, you think you're doing something? You did some good stuff, but really, you ain't really impressing me. You go to Revelation chapter 2 and 3, and you'll see that a lot of the stuff that goes on inside the church really wasn't impressing God. Because the reality was, out of seven churches that the Lord spoke about, only two of them he was really pleased with because they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. Had nothing to do with a heart thing, but they were the one, only two didn't fall short. So here's the reality. If in the Bible we get an example of seven churches, all you got to do, count those seven around you and see where you're going to be.
Mercy.
Just count seven churches. So down that one street, Brother Mark, there's what, 13 churches? Just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, stop there and say the next two, y'all joking, Y'all probably doing all right. And then go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Y'all 5. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. But I guarantee you, there has to be where God is looking at. What are y'all doing? I know you're feeding once a month. And this is not a jab at anybody who feeds once a month, because y'all know that the food bank was one of my babies until they moved. So that's a good thing. However, there has to be somebody picking up the pieces. I've said this before. Let's talk again, economic injustice. If there are people who are hungry, and the best that you can do is give out turkeys on Thanksgiving. Can I share something with you? I've been a part of helping folks in that area, in that type of ministry for years. One of the things that kind of really just broke me down was we giving away turkeys, canned goods, food, but realizing that a whole bunch of people don't got no way to cook. How the hell are you going to cook a turkey when you ain't got nothing on the inside? But that means that we have to do a better job at knowing our neighbors.
Yeah.
That's where some of when you deal with rights, honoring people's rights or entitlement, everybody got an entitlement to eat. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you've done. Everybody has entitlement and a right to eat. Doesn't mean that you're going to eat a steak like I am. I work every day. Had somebody tell me today, in financial problems, because they taking care of their family. What's the matter with them? Do they work? No, they don't work. Okay, well, what's the problem? They don't want to work. So you putting yourself in debt, taking care of family members that don't want to work. See, everybody ain't like me. Mama, you know.
I know.
Mama, you already know. That's not giving.
That's
being manipulated.
Yeah.
That's enabling, because them jokers know.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the sad part. If this person dies before they get their act together, guess who ain't going to care about putting their behinds on the street? Guess who ain't going to care about turning off their lights? So here's what happens. Then they revert back to where? The church.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that mama who's been supporting them, or daddy has been supporting them, or grandmother has been supporting them all this time, they try to come to the church to get some help. And because of a sense of entitlement, maybe, that was Big Mama, this was Brother Dunlap, he'd been a faithful tither all 45 years, and you're going to help for a little while, maybe one time. Well, we do it one time. Do it one time? What about God giving you a one-time blessing? I need God's mercy. I need his grace every day. I drive a lot doing what I do. I fly a lot doing what I do. I need some grace and I need some mercy every time I get in an airplane. Every time I get in a car going somewhere. So if we're going to deal with justice, then grace and mercy got to come in this thing. Because if it doesn't, you have people that are still going to be living the same way. Mark, what you mentioned in Matthew 23, oh my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's a way you deal with that, right? There's a way we deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful.
Oh, my God.
Of who you are following. Now, don't give me, I'll put it out there. I do some jacked up stuff. I know it. I got attitude sometimes. I know it. I cuss every now and then. I know it. Yeah, I said it. Because some of y'all jokers ain't going to say it. And I done heard you. I sit in the barbershop with you. Rev, pastor 40 years. Let's stop playing. Right? So let's racist. Yeah, let's stop playing. White, black, it don't matter. We all got our little quirks and issues. We all fall short and all that kind of stuff. Got it. But when you're doing some stuff that you just know is really holding up people, like Mark said, making stuff hard for them, putting burdens on their shoulders, and then don't do nothing to help them. Oh,
mm-hmm.
those are those situations where you may be concerned about a heap of coals on your head.
But you know,
because of what you're not doing, and that doesn't mean. And this is the beauty of that verse that Mark read. It says never lift a finger. Never lift a finger doesn't mean that you have to physically do it. If you're a leader, utilize the people that are around you. But if you're doing everything like, y'all mute your phones for me, please. If you're doing everything yourself, like Moses was doing in Exodus 18, that pre-Jethro Moses, then you're never going to really be able to help the people like they deserve to be helped. Justice is about distribution, it's about equity, it's about the rights of people, and it's about power. How are we exercising this stuff in the church, especially when it comes to things of economics? Y'all got me going tonight. I think.
Well, it's good. I'll tell you that. It's good. That's for sure. It's good. So.
Yes.
Oh, let me go one more place. I
go
know
ahead.
One more place. So I told you about the Levites, right? You know they were the priestly people, right? And then we know about the foreigners. So let's deal with this thing. When you got people who are foreigners, what does foreigners mean to you today? Is it foreigners somebody who just moved to your city that ain't got it all together, ain't got everything situated yet?
Mm.
And let's and let's be true. Let's be honest about this. If you don't take care of the people in your church, if y'all don't take care of each other in within your church, ain't no way in the world. Y'all killing me on the background noise tonight. There's no way in the world that I should have any expectation that you're going to take care of the widows and the orphans in your spot. So here's a big test for me, and here should be a test for you. Because, see, you know that widows, oftentimes when we think about widows, unfortunately in today's time, widows are like 20 in the 20s, when widows should usually be like in their 60s. That's how it used to be. But now people are dying earlier. People are getting killed in Charlottesville. All right, so we know widows are not just old ladies anymore. And if you can't help take care of the widows, when it comes to the orphans, those who are without the parents, who are you taking care of? If you ain't taking care of the foreigners, if you're not taking care of the widows, if you're not taking care of the orphans, who are you taking care of? If the people ain't being taken care of within your household, not your household individually like the Dunlap household, but my household of faith, my tribe, if we ain't taking care of each other, I don't care who says it. Anytime the number one person within the church structure that gets taken care of is the pastor first, then you do not have a biblically structured church. I'm done. Sister Moore, any more comments?
I am speechless right now.
No. Because I'm done, Brother Mark.
Yeah, you can drop the mic on that one.
I tell you, oh wow.
Well, listen, tomorrow at 2 p.m., we hope that all those who can listen will be available to listen. So tomorrow at 2 p.m., if I'm not mistaken, tomorrow is the third Friday of the month. And guess what happens on the third Friday of the month?
Health.
Here on the PRF table. Your health is your wealth. That is none other than our good friend, Sister Kimberly Silas. She has her show, Your Health is Your Wealth, and she has been knocking it out the park on each show so far. And she has been just been such a blessing, bringing especially the consciousness, Christ consciousness perspective to being healthy and tying this thing into wealth. So listen, she was on with us back in January for the month of January. You know, that's how we always start off the year. And she has accepted the call, if you will, to taking what God has allowed her to go through, how he has brought her, and being able to help other people. So on tomorrow, again, this is first and third Friday. Tomorrow is the third Friday, 2 p.m. Your health is your wealth. If you're listening online and you want to call in, 347-215-7934. And as always, you can catch all of our shows on blogtalkradio.com/PRF table. And so with that, Sister Moore, Brother Mark, Mama, Sister Laura, God bless all of you for being and listening to me ramble. I know I just rambling, but nah. But yes, we're so grateful. I mean, God just wants us to do the right thing. And when you talk about justice, you're talking about doing the right thing. That's what he talked about in Micah chapter 6, verse 8. So go to our Facebook page, PRF Teaching Ministry on Facebook, and just engage us. Let's start getting some conversations going throughout the week so that more people can see what we're talking about, because a lot of people are just, quite frankly, have other things to do on Thursday night at 8 p.m. I know there's some football games that's just coming on, some baseball games, and I know those things are important. And all that money that those baseball players, those football players that they're making, Mama, I know that's really going to help you in your situation with your broke self. So we're thankful that we're available and that God has made this where You can listen to it on your job. You can listen to it if they allow it. Don't do nothing crazy. You can listen to it on your way going to work. You can get to it through our Facebook page or even through our ministry page, prfministry.org. We have to make fun of some things because, honestly, a lot of times we cry. We cry for y'all because of seeing so much of what y'all go through. We know that a lot of stuff is just not right. We know God desires to do better for you, but you got to understand, if you're not part of that remnant, you may get left behind. So with that, God bless you. We love you. We'll talk to you next week or tomorrow, and then next week on the PRF table, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. God bless y'all. We love you. Peace.